Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Professional Awesome's Hypercritical Radio. I'm Hayden Lowe, and I'm one of three hosts today. I am joined by...
Devin, I'm fucking tired, Giles.
Dan, I should have got cocaine for Devin O'Donnell.
Well.
And we don't have a special guest tonight. This is an update for everyone about what we're doing with our lives that you may have some interest in.
Debatable, but yes.
Yeah.
No one, right. No one has interest in our lives.
No, nobody's interested.
I realized off mic we were talking about order of operations, and then we started recording, and then no one had agreed upon what the hell the order of operations was.
Just order operations and go. Nailed it.
So I'll put it to Devin then. So we're gonna update a little bit about our project cars and what we've been doing over the last couple months. And honestly, Devin threw a curveball to me. I didn't see it coming at all. He's switching the engine out in the S2000. And yeah, it's just one day it was happening. I didn't know why it was happening. And I'd love to know more about what you're doing, why, thought process.
Okay. So this was actually over a course of 2 weeks of me endlessly researching if it was a good idea to do or not. What happened was I was looking for a trans kit. I wound up on a Granis Racing's website for a T56 swap for the K-Series. I ended up looking around their site and saw that they had a swap for another particular engine. And I thought that with my horsepower goals, that it might be a better option. So I started researching around. And I guess for those that don't know, my horsepower goals is 800 to the wheels for drag racing. And having a four cylinder aluminum block, just makes things a little less reliable. Then you gotta worry about dropping sleeves if you sleeve them, aftermarket sleeves in them. And I just didn't want to have to deal with a headache. Plus they tend to run hot when you put sleeves in them. And I was just like, yeah, whatever. It led me to want to put a 2J in my car because one, I've always wanted a 2J because I'm a fanboy of Fast and Furious, and the Supra and first Fast and Furious is actually a reason I got into imports, but one of the reasons. Two, I feel like the internet tells me I can make 800 horsepower with adding an intercooler. So I figured they must be right. But three, realistically, it just seems like a lot easier to make a ton of horsepower and be more reliable, turn more laps, I suppose. But realistically, it's just rule one. I really wanted to do it, so I'm fucking doing it. Right? I'm already 31. Might as well do it, right?
Do you need any more reason than just wanting to do something?
Yeah. I mean, it's already got negatives. It's it's going to be 200 pounds when said and done heavier than the K-Series with the turbo stuff. Well, 200 to 225, because obviously you got a 2J, you got to put a big ass turbo on it. So that weighs more than the one I had on the K-Series. Other than that, I'm going to have to fabricate some stuff with the steering rack. Got to relocate, move it forward about 3 or 4 inches. Figure out how to make that work.
Holy shit. That's
big difference.
That's not insignificant. Right, it's
a big deal. Yeah. So obviously there's going to be some math involved in that to make it not steer like shit. Two, I need to...
Is there any aftermarket guide on that?
No, not really. So since a lot of drag guys do it, they just move to like a Pinto steering rack or any rack that just fits because they don't have to steer much, right? So they take the electronic power steering out anyway. And they just need to, you know, you only need this much.
Go straight?
You know? If you go on this, if you're like this, you're probably going to die. So... For those, I guess this is an audible medium. If you're crossed over doing drag racing, you're going to hit a wall. Simple as that. So there are a couple, like the LS swap groups and stuff, they have to relocate theirs as well. So it's been an interesting ride so far. Going out to fabricate some of the subframe and the whole powertrain is going to be different, right? So it's going to be a 2J to a CD09, which is a 350, 370Z. Trans to a Ford Explorer diff. So, I mean, it's kind of a bastard child now, so it's whatever. Other than that, I guess that's pretty much it, right? I mean, I guess that's a significant thing, but it should be fun. I think I'm kind of excited about the challenge to completely change the characteristics of the car and to see how that, maybe it suits my driving style more, maybe it doesn't, or just having fun creating something again, you know?
Yeah, it's a big task to undertake, which always makes me nervous. The older I get, the lazier I get and the less I want to do. So when you came up with the 2J, like you're buying it, I was like, oh dear God, it's a lot of work. And I feel that way. Like for those who don't know, I have a wife named Krista who's awful.
And I know where this is going.
She bought a ambulance that she's converting into like a mobile RV that she can tow her horses with, or her horse. She only has one now. But these projects that people around me are coming up with are just so ginormous. It's kind of hard for me to even contemplate.
Is there a deal like if you help her with the project, then you can use it to tow the Evo?
No, I wouldn't even want that. That was I threw out that idea to Grant and Mike. Well, and I threw it out to Krista too. What if, you know, Professional Awesome and my wife went together on building an RV to, you know, when she needs it, she can use it. When we need it, we can use it. And she was totally against the idea because she didn't, you know, if there's a weekend, she was going to, you know, ride her horse and she needs to take it to a show. You know, she doesn't want to have to come up with another idea, or, you know, alternatively, we would have to come up with another vehicle. So that was quickly shelved pretty quickly. I know Grant is pretty interested at making his own RV along those lines, maybe an ambulance build, maybe a box truck, maybe another van. We were talking about it a little bit, but I think his ideas of what he wants, they're more personal than what Professional Awesome wants. I just want a regular truck and we'll get hotels as we need them. I always think that's like whatever you're going to spend on retrofitting an RV, you can do a hell of a lot more. I mean, you can do a hell of a lot of hotels for the cost of what it takes to do an RV camper right. And then like, what? How does it work for three dudes? And, it doesn't. You know, I'd rather have just a really good truck that can meet our needs for towing, and then we'll figure out the rest of the stuff with how I like to say it is rooms that don't go through category 5 earthquake every single time you move it.
That's fair.
Does that make sense?
Like when I was doing the overland build stuff, right, with the truck, then when we took that trip to Texas, I realized like, man, it's just easier just to get a hotel. Like it's more comfortable. I mean, if I just take all my shit in, bring it back out, like it's not hard. So I kind of squashed the whole RV thing too, like the van life, as they say. Like, fuck that. Just not with it anymore.
Yeah. The idea is beautiful, but in practice,
like this is kind of dumb.
I still have aspirations. So we'll see if I squander them myself with what I end up doing. I am in between two things right now. It's either a Volkswagen, which everybody all at once, that's a bad idea. Or Tanner put me in the direction of importing a Mitsubishi Delica 4x4 Star Wagon.
Oh boy.
Which is, those are dope.
They are dope.
It's a 4x4 diesel wagon that can tow 6,500 pounds.
My only problem is like, and parts wise, like even maintenance parts, they're not like
the same thing.
I don't know what it's like. I can't remember what engine, like the platform that those they share, if they share anything. I haven't looked super deep into it. They're not super popular over here yet, so they're not disgustingly expensive for what they are. And you can get models from Japan that are like, oh, there's 30,000 kilometers on this, and imported with paperwork, you're looking at like maybe 17 grand delivered to California.
I mean, they
still a lot of money for me.
That's a lot of money, but they did just scare me so much because none of the engines for that thing came here because they didn't bring any of the diesels over here. So it's just like, it makes me afraid of you buy a lemon unknowingly, or Just even like, oh yeah, I'm gonna change fucking injectors. Just kidding. Go fuck myself. I gotta buy a whole new car. You know? Or you're paying JDM land tax or whatever, you know.
It's funny. I'm thinking, so there's in like three different generations on this podcast. Hayden's the youngest. He's full of hope and bright eyed and he's willing to take dumb projects on and
looks at garage. Then,
yeah. Then Devin's a little bit more beat up, a little bit more like the world is shat upon him, but he still has, there's some hope. There's a 2J, like I can do that. Oh, I can swap this S2000. It's going to be great. And then there's me, keep it stock for the love of God.
Oh, yeah, plus
anything again.
I mean, I think I'm like you too, man. I still got a stock car, right? Like I still got a Cavalier that, that you know, Tim from Gear was like, yeah, we can turbo it. I'm just like, absolutely fucking not. Like, and then that's another reason why I got the 2J too, because I was like, well, I don't have a new turbo for a while, so I might as well. I mean, would it be nice to put next to it? Oh, 2J, perfect, nailed it. So I guess I'm living both lives, right? You get one car that's too much, and one stock car.
But you're in between. Yeah,
that's true. I mean, it's fair.
It makes perfect sense. You're right fair. In between us. Yeah, still
living vicariously through both age groups.
Yeah, so you're trying something.
Yeah. Wait till you're old and weathered like me and people look at you and point and laugh.
I mean, still do that for me.
So too. Like Eric?
Ooh, that's true.
Oh, like Eric. Ouch. No. He's not even here to defend himself.
Nobody even points and laughs at that guy.
He's going to hear this too.
He's great and he's still taking on projects. Just
still threw it out there.
Yeah. To threw him under the
right
bus.
Right under the bus.
Under the ambulance.
Oof. No sirens because she took those out.
So, back to the S2000 real quick. What turbo's going in it? Like what? I know you have like a 800 horsepower goal. At what RPM? Like what? What do 2Js do? I know they're bulletproof.
I can see your brain thinking. That is hilarious. You just
all I do is four cylinders.
So I don't even know what the fuck to ask you. What is?
Yeah.
Just give me a real overview of what's happening.
Did you get the VVTI? I remember you were talking about
that. Is correct.
Variable valve. You got that?
That's correct. Yeah. Well, I mean, I also made a mistake, right? Since, so 2Js came, it's already starting. 2Js came front and rear sump. So I need a rear sump for my subframe. It just makes it less cutting, right? So there was only one rear sump that was close. They only came SE300s in some Aristos overseas. So I got one from a local drifter. And, you know, I was there and I was cranking it over. And I noticed it didn't have much compression, but I was like, oh, maybe it'll be okay. Because, you know, buying another rear sump was $800 by itself, and I was buying this engine for a grand. So I was like, oh, all right. Well, I get it home, and then it's like I'm taking it apart. And one, the coolant that is coming out is kind of like that brown, like gross shit. Like that weird orange that shows that it's got rust in it. So I'm like, okay, whatever. That's not a good start, but fuck it, whatever. My Miata had that. It still ran. It was fine. But then I dropped and it still had full oil. So I dropped the oil and obviously nothing but water came out and then the oil came out. So I'm going to say at least has a minimum of blown head gasket, but it still freely turns. So I don't think I bent any rods or crushed a piston in there. So that's all that matters. I just need to block, rear sump and a crank. Being a VVTI, I can't run over 400 horsepower or it'll explode because of the difference between a GE VVTI and basically all the 2Js are the same internally, right? Except for the VVTI ones, NA ones. They have weaker rods and pistons to save weight because they don't need to handle the turbo, the boost, right? So, I mean, luckily for me, has some partners involved, so it's going to get built right away. So that's okay. But turbo wise, it'll be a G40 1150. So slightly more turbo than I need. Which is my goal is to not have to get another turbo for quite some time.
Sure. Bigger is better, I always think. And the more like in practice, so we've got a GTX 3582R on the Evo, and we're just never down low in the rev range for what we're doing. So it's like, why the hell did we go to where we're pushing this turbo to the limit versus keeping something like, a G40 and a healthy RPM range and a healthy pressure ratio, whatever you want to say.
Yeah, like I want to be in that just right in the turbo's efficiency range, right? But I want to be just just as it's starting to get like right at that maximum to below maximum efficiency and not like bringing it the fuck out, making extra heat, you know? I'm only revving 8,000. It's going to be a super simple build. I mean, you see 2J parts online, and one, they're expensive, and two, people just go way too far for what their real goals are, right? Where it's just like, yeah, I got to have billet this, billet that, billet this. Hell yeah, I got a $50,000 engine now. It's like, what the? That's not the pro all way of doing things. We are poor.
No.
So, I mean, it should be fun. It's going to be a basic cam, valve train, piston rods, you know, and then all the cooling mods that comes with that. And every sensor I can get my hands on and monitor it. And I'm only going to make the 800 for drag racing. I just want to run, a 10 second class, right? But since it's a time attack car first, it does drag racing. My 60 foots are going to be fucking ass. So I just want to, you know, just run people down in the back door, basically, pretty much. A 10 second car that runs a 9 second, like an 8 second fucking mile an hour. So, you know, for our drag racing people, that they would get it. For our normal audience, they're like, yeah, talking French.
So what is a 60 foot again?
That's a trailer, right?
do you remember the FXMD NSX? Does anyone care about that from Time Attack Land?
I'm not sure Hayden would remember. I vaguely remember it.
You vaguely. Yeah, you again, too young. It was the fastest lap holder at Button Willow. And just today, funny enough, I was watching a video that John Adairy Nads, who's been on this podcast before, who's worked with Hoonigan, he put together 12, 13 years ago about them taking their Time Attack NSX drag racing with the goal of running nines. And they had a regular H pattern transmission in it. It had a OS Geiken limited slip. And they were making about 800, I think, somewhere in that range. And they were doing lifting the front wheels off the ground on Time Attack slicks. And that was
pretty sick.
Freaking sick. But they broke like the ring and pinion or something like that when they were launching. But it's not that different from what you're trying to do to make a Time Attack build run tens and also be extremely fast. And I've kind of like, part of me is like hurt because iron block and 200 pounds or 250 pounds, but reliability and knowing that you can just do the simple stuff to a 2J, just as long as somebody puts the pistons rods in right, you get the studs on there right.
Send it.
A simple head gasket. Yeah.
OEM head gasket at that.
Yeah. So I'm still torn a little bit, but I can see it. I can see the vision you have. See the vision?
Mm-hmm.
I can see it. Yeah.
The recipe is not there. Yet.
Yeah.
That's another reason why I didn't ask you guys. I kind of just told you when it was happening, right?
Sure.
Yep. Sold my engine. Here he is.
Nothing wrong with that.
You can't talk me out of it now. But yeah, I mean, like you said, the 200 pounds is a thing, right? I think the more challenge for me is not the weight, because the K series, I was 2690 with me in it, right? So that kind of puts me up to.
That's lightweight. I mean, nice.
Yeah. I mean, especially compared to Evo World, right? So this puts me at basically GOTC S2000 weight. So my main concern is getting the steering right. I don't want to really fuck that up too much. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, I know it's going to be different, but I just want to refine it so that it's as good as it can be.
Mm-hmm. And it's just the sump that gets in the way, or the front two pistons, or what's the biggest problem?
Yeah, it's the whole engine. I mean, well,
yeah.
Well, as you know, S2000s are technically mid-engine. I put quotations up. So it sits a solid, 3 inches behind the shock tower?
Okay.
The 2JZ sits at the shock tower. Like that front, like your front cover basically sits at the leading edge of the shock tower.
Okay.
So it's still pretty far back for most cars, but for an S2000, that's pretty far forward.
Like 6 inches forward, something like that.
Yeah, roughly.
I don't know.
Three and a quarter.
Three and a quarter. That's how I measure things. I'm like, yeah, that's definitely 6 inches. I swear to God.
Oh, God.
Let's get to the big news, you know, what everybody comes here for. And give us an update with the, the old Evo there or something, you know? The Fast
Evo. The Fast Evo, not my Evo 10 project, the Professional Awesome Time Attack Evo 8, the real one. As I've said before, but like it's hard to give details. We don't post about it on on social media at all. Grant has been in the freaking garage working on this thing throughout the pandemic. New engine, new transmission, new front differential, new center differential, all new wiring, PDM, ECU. I mean, the list goes on and on. And maybe 2-3 months ago, he kind of put it on Mike and me that we need to get out and start helping him out more. And so I've been, probably 5-6 days a week over at the shop helping him in any way I can, mainly just support because he's done all the heavy lifting and now it's just a lot of detail stuff. And Mike's been coming over. And 2 weekends ago, we finally got the car ready enough to go do a track day, a test day up at Gingerman. And lots of nerves because, I mean, the cooling system's new. We haven't been able to honestly have this car reliable in 10 years. Since we went from a stock engine car to our first built engine, we've blown head gaskets, had cooling issues for 10 years. And it's kind of remarkable for me to even think about that, that for 10 years we've been struggling with everything. So we've had a bunch of different solutions we've tried in the meantime, O-rings, different block styles, et cetera, et cetera. And we were testing kind of, we know one other person who's running what is essentially like a firing setup where we have a stainless steel ring machined into the block that bites into the cylinder head with a composite gasket to seal the oil and coolant packages. And we dynoed it in Canada. And we came back and we had leak down on the cylinder. Well, it turns out that the stainless steel rings distort the cylinder head. And so when you torque it down, you're twisting the head because the rings sit proud of the block and it was causing one of the valves to leak. So the head wasn't actually damaged at all, but because of how it was torqued, it was twisted. And I mean, so we pulled everything apart. Luckily, our guy who does the engines now works on IndyCar engines. And sure enough, they use a very similar design on different. Maybe I couldn't speak to a modern IndyCar engine, but he works on ones from the 90s and 2000s. Hell, all the way back to Offenhausers and stuff from the 60s and stuff. But he says, oh, well, we've experienced that too, because there's not enough meat out on the edge of the cylinder head. So you can torque up the center of the heads, but you can't torque up the outside. It's the same way. So he kind of gave us a methodology to try while we were torquing up the head. Got the head back, everything remachined, gave it to Grant. And Grant followed his advice and used some Grant logic as well while doing it and torqued up the head. Now no leak down. Everything seals up. So seemingly this is a good place to be. We went for this track day 2 weekends ago and the car was near flawless. Everything that we've done, I should say mostly Grant has done from cooling system wise, ECU wise, we've had Jason at Link help us and Eric Levine Motorsports do the heavy lifting of the tuning. Just worked, all worked. Engine had no head gasket issues, no cooling issues. It was a struggle to get the engine warm. We could go. It's a
good problem to have.
Good problem to have. 4 or 5 hard laps in a row. Water temps staying at 175, 180.
Oh, wow. Now, wow.
Yeah. And this is on maybe a 60 degree day, 65 degree day. It was nice and cool, but it wasn't like, you know, 40 degrees like it could be at Gingerman this time of year. Transmission worked flawlessly. The front differential, we had some concerns about, and maybe we should still be concerned about, but nothing weird. All the wheel spin issues that we had previously were gone. The only thing we had was potential issue with our PDM that we have one of the earliest AIM PDMs that ever made it into the country before they did hardware revisions. It wasn't enough to stop us. It wasn't enough to damage anything. It was just something that we're not responsible for. AIM said we've done nothing wrong, but we had it shut off one time for us on track. After cycling everything, the car started back up. So no big deal, other than it sucks that the car shut off while middle of driving. But happened once, rebooted everything, all fine for the rest of the track day. They're able to see the issue and are sending us new hardware to replace the old. And they gave us a backup. So, I mean, extremely good customer service. So if we have a problem with what they send, we have another backup that can go in. And even if that does happen, it's like, hell, if it just costs us one session, you know, it's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. Not bad, compared to where we were before. So the other thing, I got in the car and we didn't have wastegate settings set up quite right. It is a bit on me for not understanding how Link works in that regard, but it was quickly figured out. So we were running like 25 to like 28 pounds of boost. First time driving, I have not driven in 3 or 4 years anything remotely as fast as the Evo. I haven't driven consistently in 7, 8, 9 years. Like I am fucking rusty as shit. And with absolutely no passing on one of the straights because I got stuck behind a Porsche, and I respect point buys. I'm not going to go in a HPDE day and not, you know, follow the laws. Not try to win it. Yeah. First session out, I guess the first session, maybe we only did a lap or two and pulled it back in just to make sure nothing was leaking. But yeah, second session, the first session where I actually tried at all, it was a 133. Which is not smoking fast, but I'm telling you, like, stuck behind a Porsche for an entire straight.
I mean, you say like, that's not smoking fast, but that's like, I think if we were to go on track Midwest standards, that's still like top 10.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, but for Evo standards, being that it's been a 28, I get it. But yeah. All right, now put your dick away. Let's not stop putting it on the table for our audience to feel bad. All right. 33 is still pretty
sorry quick. About that. Yeah. we figured out the wastegate issue and then we turned down the boost to the lowest it'll run. So it'll run 16 tapering up to 19. And then I was just clicking off with traffic, with waiting for point buys, 133s, just boom, boom, one after another. Oil temp's fine, water temp's fine. We monitored coolant pressures. Turning laps until we could run it until we ran out of gas.
I've heard that in a long time.
That's exciting.
Yeah. Air inlet temperature sub 100 degrees. I mean, it was like everything was like, this is good. Working. Oh, well, this is good. Oh, this is good. The handling wise, like, again, I'm a freaking scrub now. I will have no problem admitting how rusty I am. And it was just easy to drive. It was like no problem. So yeah, we had such a successful day. Car went on the trailer, no problem. We thought, heck, we could stick around and do some more testing, but we got kind of all the data we needed. We did all the logs to send to Link and to send to Eric Levine. So we wrapped it up. It's like, we don't need to beat the car up. And then we got in the line with Jason Deanhart with Global Time Attack and then committed to going to Super Lap Battle this November from the 11th to the 13th. Talked to Tom O'Gorman.
GTA finals, sir.
GTA finals. It's not Super Lap. Is only Coda. Yeah,
Super Lap is February only.
Okay, fair enough. Whatever. They're
separate now.
Button wheel is the only thing that matters to me for the guys right now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, talk to Tomo. Tomo is down. He's got a wedding that he's of his best friend that he's going to practice day, and then flying red eye out. We'll pick him up, put him in the car, and. Yeah, see what we can do. So I'm like, honestly, even talking about it, like my heart's getting a little pumping in my chest, you know, and I'm like,
yeah, but you got a smile on your face. Excited. You're all like,
yeah, yeah, no, it's pumped. It's positive energy, but it's still crazy. I was talking to Nads today, actually, because, I mean, he's who brought Time Attack to the U.S. That's how it feels from my perspective. Him, Super Street Magazine, and kind of letting him know and thinking, shit, like, we've been chasing this for 10 years for just to lose money. There's no glory. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if the sponsors lots even care, really. Yeah, like,
not really.
But it's exciting. Care. Yeah, only we care. But it's like, holy shit, this is the best I've ever felt about our chances. And I know, like, there's the curse that
still in the back of your head
every time, like, we've
what
gone.
The fuck's gonna go wrong?
It's still, yeah. It's not even that. Like, I'm like so confident that the confidence makes me nervous. Like, I'm I'm missing something. Like, I'm blinded to something obvious. And we'll go to GTA finals and see what we can do. See if we can actually get this lap record we've been so close to on so many occasions. And
so yeah. I have a real question for you, which mm-hmm. I've been thinking about this for a while, right? Like, what's the end goal? Like, for me, it's just, I just want to build cool shit and go fast in it, right? I just want to build cool shit yeah. going fast kind of second. So if you get this record, you know, like, if you get this record by, like, let's say a dominant form, a solid second, then mm-hmm. what? Then what's after that? Do you just retire the car until somebody else beats it? Or, well, let's for instance, you get Button Willow record, then you get Gingerman record. That's one, mm-hmm. 1A, 2B. Then what?
For me, like, I was listening to High Performance Academy's podcast, and they were talking to Stephan Papadakis. And it was, like, the most perfect podcast for me to listen. This was a couple days ago. I was listening to it, then I started talking to Grant about it. So Stephan Papadakis runs Papadakis Racing. They support the drift car for Frederick Aspo, who's the most winningest Formula D driver ever, which is cool. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that until listening.
Drives a Gold Supra. It's a B58, right?
Well, yes. And they used to drive the Scion TC with a 2AR four-cylinder, 1,000 horsepower engine. And so the cool thing about the podcast was they talked about how they went from, like, a V8, I think, to the 2AR because Scion wanted a more representative engine rather than having a LS in their TC, and they did everything how we should have did it. Like, I realizing now, when we got into Time Attack, we started doing everything incremental until street class, it was incremental. Then we got to limited class, it was fairly incremental. We went to the built engine, and we obviously hadn't figured out exactly how to make those work right. But then we went to unlimited, we just absolutely swung for the fences, and it was no longer incremental. It was taking all of our craziest, wildest ideas, trying to implement them all at the same time. And then, since 2014, 2015 or whatever, we've been dialing back. Certain things are crazy now compared to then, like having a dry sump and stuff, but the dry sump is reliability. It's actually less crazy than trying to make the wet sump work. You know, getting a sequential is expensive, but it's less crazy than trying to make an H pattern work. Trying to make a 2.4 liter, I think, was the first size we went for built engine. Trying to make that work was crazy compared to what we're doing now, which is doing a 2 liter stock block, you know, as much meat as we can in the cylinders, stock crank. You know, we always had this billet stuff, and it's like, no, I mean, simplifying. So, what Papadakis, how that relates was they took this 2AR and their first goal was 500 horsepower, then 600, then 700, and they slowly worked their way up. And he talked about all the things that they, all the headaches they had along the way and all the things that they solved. And now where they sit is, at least until they stop using the 2AR, they would have three engines. So they'd have two engines that were built exactly the same, that were known, that they've had a history of being reliable the year before. So that's the pistons are going to use, rods are going to use, all that stuff is going to be the same. And they used one of these engines for half a year in Formula D, which to me is incredible. Like,
yeah,
one of the engines could survive half a year and be reliable without issue. It's like, that's pretty sweet. And then he said, honestly, we could probably use one engine for an entire year, but this way we have a backup that we know works. So halfway through the season, they switch to the second engine and they keep the used engine as a backup. And they would go years without blowing up engines. The third engine would be used for testing new ideas, I don't know, he didn't specify exactly, but let's say it's pistons or rods or cams or whatever. And so they would throw that in on occasion to see if this is the way they should move forward in the future or if they should stick with their existing design. And I loved it. It gave me hope. Like they've got 1,000 horsepower four cylinder with similar turbo. I mean, it's going to be bigger, but you know, within the reason of where we are, it lasts for a full season of FD, no blown head gaskets. They use Ignite Red fuel like we use. It's like, shit, if they can do it, they found it, then maybe this is how we have it. They use a fire ring system too. Theirs is a gas-filled O-ring, which is a little different than what we use, but it's kind of the similar concept. It's like, all right, if we have figured out how to unlock reliability, then this opens up the world for us to focus on all the other things that we've had to ignore because we've been trying to make the engine reliable. So you ask, like, what's the future hold for me? If it blows up at Buttonwillow, we don't get the record, that'd be more of a death sentence for us competing than if we do well. If Tom has a good time, if it's fucking reliable, it just, to me, it opens up everything. So yeah, I'd like to go to Gingerman, of course. And I'd like to do what we did to the engine to the aerodynamics, which is simplify, take a few steps back. I don't know if Mike agrees with me. I don't know if Grant agrees with me on that stuff.
Mike doesn't. We know Mike doesn't.
But yeah, it's stripping away these crazy ass ideas we had from 10 years ago that maybe they work. I mean, obviously they work to some degree. But maybe we push too far in other ways. I don't know. Well, but we've never been able to test either. So if we can sit and test.
We want to make the low-hanging fruit perfect before trying to go crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if we can start when we were doing street class, I think we won like 10 events in a row or 10 records. It was crazy. It was like we had everything figured out. We were going from track to track. And to me, that, you know, that is something we can take to sponsors to be, okay, do you want to, you know, Fortune, do you want to be a part of this party where we have a consistent vehicle now for the first time ever? We have a top-level driver who, you know, I don't know if there's many other people on the planet right now that are better than Tom with how well he's driving. You know, I don't know. To me, it's opening up a new chapter by rebuilding some excitement rather than 10 years of blown engines and stress and frustration. It's kind of insane to me that we've stuck with it this long through a lot of lean periods. So
I think we talked about it a lot, you know, off air. It's you guys have been kicked in the face so much that, you know, I would have definitely chalked it up, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, right? Where it's like you get there, you spend all this money to get to like Button, right? And then to have something stupid like an ECU failure or a random ass fire where it's just like, holy shit. And then it's even worse when you're like, you're on this flyer. Like everything's like the twinkle in your eye is just sparkling off the sunset at Button, you know? And then it's just like last corner, fuck this. God damn it. I'm checking out, you know? Like the heartache has been real. Like, I guess not a lot of people probably don't know, like our listeners probably don't know, but like the group chat is livid. Like it's live. Like, you know, it's been so long getting here. That like I'm excited to see it succeed. But like either way, if it fails, I'm also like, whew, that's gonna be rough. But if it succeeds, I'm also like, what is the motivation for everybody going to be? Like, I just want to see which, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like failure, I really don't want it to fail because I've been there when it's failed and it's a very gloomy garage, you know, when everybody's trying to figure out what the fuck are we about to do. But when it succeeds, like, oh man,
you guys low like lows and high highs. I mean,
yeah,
that's time attack for you, right? But the reliability thing, I think the older we get, the more it's like I risk resisting to turn some goddamn laps, right? Like,
I wonder first. Let me get your, this is just opinion and conjecture and all mm-hmm. that, but so. As we were getting the car ready, Jason Deanhart with Global Time Attack reached out and he's like, guys, are you coming? Are you coming? Like, he's reaching out. He's trying to, I'm sure, make it so that it's not just street class cars and, you know, mm-hmm. modified or track limited, whatever. I can't remember all the names of different. So they need some, you know, cars that look more outlandish and some bigger names high profile to come cars. To these events. High profile, great way to put it. And if we have cracked the reliability riddle, like all of a sudden, does that mean that GridLife has more incentive to get us to come out? And maybe they can leverage some of the tools that they have to be like, hey, these guys can go to a track and they can run all weekend and they can run really fast times and they aren't blowing up and, how do we help get these guys there? Is that, do you think something that's plausible or do you think it's,
well, they don't, I think now
you don't need big profile and
you do for time attack. Like you really do.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. All right. Fuck it. As I've said in other podcasts, like the lower class is only the people that compete in that class really care. Right. Like people like seeing sure. the people like seeing the Ferrises of the world. Right. Like, or the even the, mm-hmm. the Jibby Diggs, you know, like it's inspiring to see. So I feel like if you have, and especially since like about 2017, 2018, when you had James out there, Fessler with the
Mustang
yeah, yeah. and, you know,
Will guy out there was with there, the
Will with the Civic, Andy with his Evo, right? Like it was exciting to see. Like mm-hmm. I feel like that was kind of more peakish time attack things. Like, I mean, like right now we have the fastest cars. It's going to be Ferris, mm-hmm. you know, because nobody else is showing up in Unlimited. You know, Will's got a broken car. He's starting over again. You know, you guys with the reliability. And then you got like the second fast car is the Street Mart car, which from Jackie. I feel like Unlimited, crazy Unlimited cars, there will always have a place. There will always be people wanting to see it, right? It's just getting somebody to build a car to that level. That's a different story because you gotta be either well off yourself or your team. You gotta be well funded because shit's not cheap. Sponsors, I don't know if they care as much, but with, I think with the new format, GridLife, I think it's coming out with,
ooh.
I think it will matter more.
It's gonna be hot.
Cause like sponsors seem to care about the live stream for GOTC.
Sure.
Right. And even like with, the Canadian, the CSCS, like there seems to be more funding rolling into that too. So to answer your question in a long-winded Devin way, yeah, I think if this thing can turn some laps or even like you guys just show up, right? I think that it matters. And I think it'll just put on a good show. I mean, it's only so many times you can see Ferris go uncontested, right? Right. I mean, no offense to anybody else running Unlimited, but this year has been a kind of you know, he's 3 to 5 seconds faster than everybody. Like, no, it's cool to see records broken, but without the drama, and like I always say, people love drama. Without the drama of somebody else competing, it doesn't matter as much. I'm sorry, Ferris.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
It'd be very exciting. It's kind of one of those lead the way kind of things too. It's like, I mean, if Ferris is out there and you're out there, there's two people competing, period. So that brings, I mean, hopefully the hope is that breeds competition. So then, somebody else sees the gleaming light and they've got the car, they've got the money, or they start where you're at and they bring a car out that's going to blow up. But it's going to look good in the series having, I mean, like there's your drama, right? Somebody's going out there. They're also chasing the dream. You've found the reliability. You've put yourself in the right place. and you hope that, that brings other people to try to search for that same thing.
Just need fast people to show up and be fast.
Yeah, I wonder, and I'm like putting the cart way in front of the horse, so far in front, because I'm talking about reliability.
It's okay. You're excited. Yeah, I like it. Like
I'm talking about it like we actually figured it out, and maybe we haven't. But hopefully it's been figured out. I wonder if that will...
Well, talk with some confidence. I like
it. I wonder if that'll trickle to others, like, because that's always been... Mm-hmm. Like, everyone is pushing each other in one way or another. Like, so first, maybe it was big power, and the next, the aerodynamics starts pushing, and now it's, for me, a priority, maybe not for other people. It's just getting the cars to turn the laps. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, no problem that James Hooten pointed us in the right direction on this head gasket thing, on this firing setup. It's something we had heard of before, maybe not the exact design, but gas-filled O-rings for sure. It's common in motorsports. But
especially drag racing.
Yeah, okay. Well, I've always seen like solid wire O-rings, but you know, with copper head gaskets and stuff. But either way, like I have no problem spreading the information out into the world if that means Ferris can keep engines Absolutely. Together better, if that means, you know, James and, you know, Will and whoever else is doing crazy stuff, like that. I mean, that would be next level if the cars can run a whole weekend and the organizers can rely on the big name cars to do more than just one lap. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what excites me so much about what like Mike does sometimes, is working with so many people that are out there on the field, or like the people that drive but are also actively making other people's cars better on the field as well. Like that's really exciting to me, to be in a community where everybody cares about everybody unless there's some stupid bad blood between a couple of people. Like everybody's there to get better at what they're doing, and it's nice to see that it's not a closed door conversation when it comes to things like that. You're like, hey, I found something. Here's what we're doing. It's out there and it's helping everybody else. Or it may not. It may or may not help everybody else. Yeah. But you're putting it out there.
I think it's key. It's like it depends on what it is, right?
Yeah.
Like if something gives especially these top tier type of let's say you're top five in every class. There's something that's not being said. But when it comes to like wanting to keep people driving, I think reliability things is like, I'm willing to share that. That's fine.
Yeah.
But certain things I think give you a performance edge. I don't know if everybody's going to share that.
Yeah. I remember talking 10 years ago, or whatever, with Mike and the guys about telling others what we're doing. And it's one thing to say, okay, we've got Fortunatos, we've got these springs, we've got these tires, we've got these wheels, whatever. You can, you know, list all your ingredients to success, but making that, it's not a piece of cake to make a pretty cake. So, like, we can tell people exactly what we've done. We can even tell them kind of how, but then when somebody goes to implement that on their own, that's challenging. And I don't think it's ever negatively impacted us giving out our performance secrets, quote unquote. Maybe it's made other people faster for sure, but it's not, no one's ever taken something we had and judoed it and made, you know, gone surpassed us dramatically. Because we're always trying to step our game up at the exact same time. And yeah, hopefully this can still attest to it.
Well, that reminds me a lot about how Mike constantly talks about the rear diffuser on the Evo. And he's like, yeah, that's an old design. And I keep designing better stuff for other cars.
Yeah.
And I'd love to redesign ours, but we don't have any time to redesign ours. So I just keep giving people better stuff. And it's like, we're running on crap, but it works. It's good.
Yeah, it's
I think that definitely attests to like driver and Dowland, right? Like I always tell people, like, you can have the best shit. Doesn't mean it's gonna work for you.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, Mike makes, he does, let's say Pro Out in general, does a lot of shit for other people. And doesn't mean you're going to be successful. I mean, it give you the right tools. It doesn't mean you can
use them,
you
know, properly.
Give you the right gun. You ain't going to shoot that. You ain't going to shoot that deer. You know what I'm saying?
It does concern me though. Everyone's going to hear this and be like, oh shit, we need to do firing. Oh. And all of a sudden it's like, oh wait, maybe that wasn't the solution. Maybe it just damages the cylinder head. Maybe that, you know, just distorts everything. That was one thing. That Papadakis, they had issues with, they were doing crazy shit. They had 13 millimeter head studs.
Yeah.
And they were torquing the cylinder heads to 150 foot-pounds. And
what?
They were trying to keep from blowing head gaskets. And it was distorting the cylinder head so much that was a problem with the seal. It wasn't, you know, the studs and you know, that was all clamped.
Could you imagine turning a head stub that high?
Oh, my gosh.
Like, holy, that is nerve-wracking.
I mean, you put 60 foot-pounds on something, and you're, like, cranking.
Oh, shit.
But to put – to lay on it –
to be in the car.
Yeah.
That's a stationary engine stand.
Yeah, really. Oof. Yeah, have to be in a car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have to have, like, two people, you know.
Yeah, they took the rollers off the engine stand, man. They mounted it to the floor, like – ooh.
So I hopefully, you know, people can take this information, and I want the feedback. What do you guys think of what we're doing? Is anyone else doing these fire rings or something similar and having success with them? I'd love to hear any and all feedback on that.
Absolutely.
We truly love feedback. I think I got a message today about how somebody's so surprised that we like this. Like, we enjoy hearing your opinion, whether it's, you know, that we're fucking idiots or, you know, we had good points, or you just, you know, hate the podcast or love it. Like, we actually enjoy hearing it. Like, you know, we enjoy constructive criticism. Maybe we can change some shit. You never know. So seriously, hit us up. Any of us. Pro Awesome Racing, whatever. Just type in professional awesome. One of us will show up.
This is true.
Yep. Yep. Very true.
Oh, sweet. Thanks, everyone.
It's that time again, boys. I need those goddamn reviews. You can say that Devin is forcing you to do them, or you can leave some genuine feedback, and I'll be sure to read them and get them back to the boys. In the meantime, you can join our Facebook group, which is Professional Awesome Technical Forum. You can follow us on Instagram at Professional Awesome Racing, and we have a Facebook regular page with the same name. But until then, we'll talk to you later, and we really appreciate you listening.